Services Budget Division will come to order. Senator Kubley, do you want to start with your bill? Senate File 36.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, committee members. You know, the Senate File 36 contains a couple modifications or variances from current law. Section 1 allows for a variance from staffing requirements for BLS ambulance services so that they can remain in place until they renew their license. And Section 2, you know, allows the ambulances that operate mainly in rural areas and, you know, when an interfacility transfer is being done, to substitute an EMT with a first responder under certain conditions. And we've got some witnesses here that can give you a little more information on that. But then Section 3 of the bill just allows any ambulance service to be reimbursed for initial training and continuing education for their volunteer attendance at a higher level than is currently the case. I think I'll let my witnesses give you a little bit more detail. It won't take too long, Madam Chair.
I'm Senator Berglund.
Welcome.
Good morning, Senators. I'm Debbie Teske. I'm the administration supervisor at the EMS Regulatory Board. Ms. Hedges was called away on a family emergency, so I came to share some thoughts with you. The things we have before you, this particular bill, deals with our volunteer ambulances primarily. These are folks who get little or no remuneration for the pre-hospital emergency medical care that they provide and the transport. The first section has been in place. We've had something similar to it with a variance. However, we wanted to make it so it coincided with the ambulance licensure every 2 years. It would be a little easier for the volunteer services to work with that. The second portion is with interfacility transports. We need to leave active EMTs in the communities to care for the 911 calls, and an interfacility transfer is one where we have them going a great distance with a stable patient, and so a first responder would be able to provide care with a certified EMT at that time. The third section that we have with the reimbursement to ambulance services basically is no increase in funding. It's the funds we have just distributed in a different manner. So the price of cost of training has gone up by the training program. So when folks take refreshers, we just want to give their ambulance service a little more as to reimburse with the same funding that we've had all the time. So our $385,000 would just be configured a little differently to allow the best usage for the volunteer. And that's all I have.
And so this you're going to be spending more than you do now under the bill. And it's going to come out of the money that you have in the bank.
That we the appropriation of $385,000 each year.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe all the money is currently spent.
Right.
It's distributed to the regions. You know, if they don't spend it on the reimbursements, they give it to the regions to cover a little bit of the cut they got a few years ago.
Okay. So this would mean more money would go to the training for the volunteers and less would go to the regions.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. But we do have a one-time increase in the omnibus bill for the regions.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, I understand that.
Senator Burton.
And if you don't get the one-time money for the increase to the regions, the regions would still be able to operate okay, even if this bill passes.
Senator Berglund, it would just be a reduction. This past year, it was $9,900 that each of the 8 regions received that we did not use for the training reimbursement. So it was under $10,000 this past year, and that has been the pattern. The initial legislation was written to more for the volunteer reimbursement rather than for the regions, but I think it was a few years ago we started giving the what we didn't use to the regions, dividing it equally.
You want to have your other witness testify?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Buck McAlpin, President of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. Last year, the Ambulance Association and the fire chiefs did a recruitment retention task force throughout the state, and we found, and we had a good idea, rural EMS was in a near crisis with staffing conditions. We were disappointed to find out that probably during certain parts of the day in rural Minnesota, way southwest, northwest, that if you called 911, we couldn't guarantee the ambulance could respond to your home. And we asked the regulatory board to bring this forward for us as an industry initiative. Most of the language is in here that addresses that. And the first responders are 40-hour trained blocks. The EMTs are about 120. But we thought in that driver position, we'd rather have the ambulance respond than not respond at all. And with the training dollar part of it, the overage did go to help support the regions. But that's why we came forward and asked this year for an appropriation to the regional programs. They've been cut quite a bit in their funding, and the regions have been an integral part of trying to help us assure we have EMS in especially rural Minnesota. So the Ambulance Association does support Senate File 36.
Are there any questions? Senator Corey.
Madam Chair, I would just be inquiring to the chair of on all of these bills, how are we going to handle these? Are we going to send these off separately, or what's the intention of the chair, if I may ask?
Senator Coring, it was the intention of the chair only to send bills out today that would not have a general fund impact.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, I believe this doesn't have a fiscal impact, so if there's no further questions, I would so move that Senate File 36 be recommended to pass and sent to the, would that be sent to the Finance Committee?
Yes.
Yes.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, then those in favor of Senator Coring's motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Senator Betzold, I think, was here next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 322 is one that might look quite familiar, particularly to you, Madam Chair. The this is a bill that we had 2 years ago and was heard in this budget division. And, in fact, when you had a bill that also did with civil commitment issues, the language actually was amended on the bill that you're carrying. But let me describe what the bill does. In my other life, as a lawyer, I do a lot of work in civil commitment defense, and in most civil commitment cases deal with mentally ill issues. Relatively small number deal with chemical dependency issues, but the trouble is, in chemical dependency commitments, you have to show that the use is habitual and excessive, in addition to the standards of danger to self or others, an inability to provide basic needs. I was contacted by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office 2 years ago. And the Native American Community Clinic, which actually is in your district, Madam Chair, I believe, had some concerns because they dealt with a lot of women who are abusing chemicals, usually alcohol, but sometimes other substances, but not to the point that it's either habitual and excessive. It might be habitual, but not excessive, or it might be excessive, but not habitual. And there were some concerns, particularly with two physicians that I worked with, Dr. Crush and Dr. Karras, that many women were putting their fetuses at risk during pregnancy, and they were seeing many cases of fetal alcohol syndrome that they thought were preventable. But the trouble is they could not use any part of the civil commitment process for this because, again, it just didn't meet the standards of habitual and excessive. The approach that I took for a very narrow group of people was to try to use early intervention. And the commitment statute does provide for early intervention, but it's mainly for mental illness because as you get individuals who are sliding down the slope, not taking their meds, it might be easy to intercept them and hook them back in and get them on track. Early intervention normally doesn't seem to work for chemical dependency because, you know, there isn't so much a slippery slope. The binge drinking may start or whatever. But this did seem to be an opportunity to use early intervention, because in this area, if you can prove early intervention, and we're not having to prove that it's habitual or excessive, just by clear and convincing evidence that a woman is pregnant and is chemically dependent and is using excessive use for non-medical purposes of controlled substances that may damage the fetus. If you can show that, then for a very limited time, which would be up to 21 days, they would be able to bring the woman into some sort of a short-term treatment program. And mainly the testimony that we had in the Judiciary Committee was just to get the attention of the people. They said that we're not looking for long-term solutions, but we do need something to try to bring them in to try to address the very serious problems that we're getting. As you see, Madam Chair, there is no fiscal impact, according to the fiscal note, on this one. This is, again, a very small group of people we're talking about. Due to the short notice, I didn't think it would be necessary to bring the physicians in here to testify that. That was in the policy committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Betzold. I will take questions from the committee. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment. It's the A1 amendment, and I think, as Senator Betzold said, I had a bill that was traveling along a similar track. It was heard in the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. It was heard in the Judiciary Committee, and in the Judiciary Committee, they amended Senator Betzold's bill onto my bill and sent it to the floor. Today, I'd like to amend my bill onto Senator Betzold's bill, because Senator Betzold's bill looks like it met deadline in the House, and mine did not. So that was kind of the agreement we had. Senator Betzold's been trying to get this bill passed for a couple of years now, and so hopefully maybe this will be the year that it'll happen. What this amendment does is it takes the basic law, which does allow for commitment of women who are pregnant and are using drugs, to also apply to women who are using alcohol or marijuana in excess to be committed. And we've heard some testimony, Madam Chair, in front of this committee of some of the programs that are working with these women, and in many cases, the threat of commitment was what got them into treatment. And so we'd have the base law, and then we also would have Senator Betzold's early intervention program.
Okay. Senator Betzold, would you like to comment on the amendment?
I don't have a copy of the amendment, Madam Chair, but I am familiar with the issue because I did see it in Judiciary. And it's a different approach, but it's the same subject area, and it actually works quite well together to have both these two bills combined. So I certainly do support the A1 amendment.
Are there questions from other members of the committee? Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator, are we at risk at all by listing the addictive chemicals in that we might miss something, or there's something else that would come along this next year that would be real appropriate? Isn't there a more of a generic term, like just illegal chemical substances? I mean, the industry talks, when you're dealing with addictions, talks about being chemically addicted, not just addicted to alcohol or addicted to whatever. Because if you're addicted to one, you're at risk for others.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, and Senator Erickson Ropes, this is the law that we have, and we did last session, Senator and I added OxyContin-type substances to the list, so it hasn't really been a problem, I don't think, trying to keep the list up to date. I think the major issue when the original law was passed was there were people who were afraid that if alcohol was included, that women might not seek prenatal care. But we see no evidence of that with the law in regard to the use of drugs. So I think we're past due to have alcohol added, since we know that fetal alcohol syndrome is one of the major preventable mental retardation effects that could be prevented in this country. I don't think this law necessarily will prevent all of it, but it will prevent some of it.
Are there any further discussion on the A1 amendment? Senator Berglund moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Betzold.
I have nothing further, Madam Chair. Okay.
Madam Chair. Senator Rosen. Recommended pass, and
we'll go to the full Finance Committee.
On Senator Rosen's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And the motion is adopted. Thank you very much,
Thank
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
And I think next we'll go to Senate File 769, Senator Saxon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have the A4 amendment to reflect the work that's been done on Senate File 769.
Madam Chair, I would so move the A4 amendment to Senate File 769 to get the bill into the shape that Senator Saxon would like.
The A4 amendment is before you, members. On Senator Coring's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The A4 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 769 is amended will allow a qualified licensed provider to serve a son or a daughter with a developmental disability. And I would like to thank the Department of Human Services for working with us on this language. And with me today is Dan McCarthy from the Department of Human Services, and he's going to briefly explain the amendment and answer any questions that the committee may have.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan McCarthy. I work with the Department of Human Services. Basically, what the amendment does, the first section actually deals with county fees for background studies and licensing inspections, and that's not a provision that I specifically have worked on. This is a provision that I believe the counties had an interest in including to assist them in recouping some of the costs that they have for licensing certain services on the local level. I've primarily worked on Sections 2 and 3, and what Sections 2 and 3 do is allow the county to certify that a licensed vendor meets all of the appropriate qualifications and permits them in Section 2 then to receive reimbursement through the GRH program for room and board costs, and in Section 3 through the Medicaid home and community-based waiver for people with developmental disabilities once there's federal approval for the service costs. And again, essentially what we're trying to address here is there are situations where a licensed vendor who meets all the provider qualifications can serve any other individual with a developmental disability except their own family member. And in this particular situation that Senator Saxon has been trying to assist his constituent on, there's not a large vendor pool in their area. And so it really has been the family who's been the driver in setting up the appropriate services for their family member. So this essentially treats, in that situation, the family member as any other vendor.
And the basic bill does not have any fiscal impact?
That's correct, Senator.
Okay. And does anybody just want to talk a little bit about this $500 annual fee to a adult foster care or child foster care licensing program? Does it cost $500 to do background studies for?
Madam Chair, that particular section, Section 1, was added in the House, and we elected.
Right, and we haven't had any testimony on it in the Senate.
No,
Senator Saxhawken,
right.
So I think it'd be appropriate for us to hear some testimony about it and to be able to ask some questions about it.
Madam Chair, I think someone from the County Association is here to speak to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Brewington. I'm the Health and Human Services Legislative Liaison for MICA, the Metropolitan Intercounty Association. Actually, it's the Minnesota Intercounty Association. We changed our name. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue today. This was something that was attached in the House at the county's request. One of our concerns is that there is a growing number of corporate foster care entities out there, and we are charged, mandated by state law, to do the licensing and the oversight of those entities. It does take a considerable amount of time to do the initial licensing, anywhere from 10 to 12 hours of direct licensing time, and that doesn't include the support staff or supervision. If it's a new corporation, it takes at least twice that long to do the initial licensing. A site visit is required, as are review of documents and any other changes. Licensors also must deal with any complaints that come in about the license provider. Adult and child foster care offers a corporate and family model as service options to individuals with mental illness, developmental disabilities, medically frail, chemically dependent, and elderly, and others. The corporate model has a staff on 24/7, usually shift staff providing the services. The adult and child family model has consumers living in the home with a family provider, so there is a lot more time involved in the oversight and licensing for these individuals. It is a cost at this time that we are not allowed by statute of recovering any of those costs. So we asked in here to be able to collect up to $500 annually when we do that initial licensing. These are not home care providers. They are corporations, and this is a cost of doing business. Some of the people that are in these that are cared for by these providers are reimbursed at a rate of several hundred dollars a day. So it is something that we feel they should be paying the cost for this. The other thing that the piece of that the amendment does is it allows the counties to waive any kind of charge for this in the event that there is a shortage in the county or they feel like it would be a hardship for a new corporation, say.
Are there questions? So it's not just the background studies, it's the whole licensing and and inspection of a facility to set up a new operation.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Any other questions on this section? Okay. No, thank you. Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, I would so move that Senate file 769 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I think on your agenda it. Oh, yeah, it's right. Senate File 1015 is one of the, what seems like many lead bills that I have this year. This committee took the replacement of windows provision out of this bill. So what's left are policy things. I have a delete everything amendment, the A9 amendment, and then I have an A10 amendment that amends the delete everything amendment. So maybe both of those could be passed out.
We have the A9 amendment in our packet. I don't think we have the A10 amendment, however.
Ms. Cavanaugh was doing the flying fingers thing this morning. So.
Madam Chair.
Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, I would just inquire about the, does Senator Higgins want the A-10 amendment or the A-9 amendment or both?
Both. The A-10 amendment amends the A-9 amendment, so the first motion that would be in order is to move the A-9 amendment.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would so move the A-9 amendment to Senate file 1015.
And Senator Higgins, do you want to just explain the A-9 amendment, and then we can move on to
Madam
the
Chair, A-10 Sam Walseth from the Sustainable Resources Center can do it better and faster than I can. So,
okay, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Sam Walseth. I represent the Sustainable Resources Center. SRC is a nonprofit organization dedicated to eliminating childhood lead poisoning here in Minnesota. And there are a host of strategies to utilize to eliminate childhood lead poisoning. One of those is to conduct focus on primary prevention. And in order to do that, a lot of work that needs to be done is to conduct an environmental risk assessment or environmental investigation of a property where a child has been diagnosed as having an elevated blood lead level. There's a handout that came around. It's a list of states in two columns. Environmental risk assessments cost approximately $400 or $500 to do. That's basically a professional who's trained and licensed to go out to a property to look at windows, chipping and peeling paint, and to basically determine whether or not there's a source of lead, where it is, and then write up recommendations about what that family needs to do to clean up that property. That cost of $400 or $500 is being reimbursed by Medicaid in several states. And basically what the language here in the A-9 amendment would do is authorize our Department of Human Services to go ahead and build into our Medicaid plan the ability for Minnesota to bill Medicaid for those risk assessments if that family in that property is eligible for Medicaid. And so what we're trying to do is move Minnesota from the right side of the column to the left side of the column to join states who are collecting some federal money for these services. That's the effect of the language. Madam Chair, I can go through a little bit of detail why the language is structured as it is. If you look, you might wonder why there's a certain specific list of services that are covered, and then on lines 1.25 to 29, a set of services that are not covered. That just mirrors what Medicaid will and will not cover for these environmental risk assessments. Namely, the services are covered at the actual property where a professional is working. What is not covered are like laboratory costs, and Medicaid won't cover those at this time. Should Medicaid ever allow us to bill for those, we would come back and ask to amend the statute to allow for that too. But at this time, the language here is consistent with what other states are doing and what Medicaid allows. So in a nutshell, Madam Chair and members, that is what the A-9 amendment does up to lines 2.3. And then lines 2.4 through the remainder, the study of blood lead testing, this gets into the issue of what type of methods are used to actually confirm an elevated blood lead level. Right now, statute requires that a venous blood draw be used to confirm an elevated blood lead level, which then triggers mandated action or that risk assessment in a property. The Sustainable Resources Center has been pushing for a couple of years to push for a second capillary test, which is a finger prick test, to be done. And the reason for that is it's easier to administer. Say, for instance, if the Sustainable Resources Center, the ClearCore program, which they operate, goes up to a Head Start site, they can administer a capillary test very easy on site instead of having to refer that family, and these are often low-income families with own transportation abilities, to then have to go to a clinic to do a follow-up venous. There's some concerns from the Department of Health and others about using a second capillary test because there are too many false positives. We've been arguing that there's technology, this new filter paper test that a company in Minnesota here called MedTox is using that would be take care of those false positives, but there's still some concerns. So what the remainder of the language here is to ask the Department of Health to conduct a study to determine what that false positive rate looks like for that new filter paper technology, and should it have a very low or become a very efficient, be determined to be an efficient testing source, we might be able to use that later on to be a trigger point. But right now we're just asking to study that technology at this time. So that's the, Madam Chair, members, that's the A9 amendment in a nutshell.
Okay, so I have just a few questions about the A9 amendment. At the bottom of page 1 on line 1.35, it says a non-federal share of services provided under this subdivision shall be from state or local funds. What state funds are we talking about? So Mr. Godfrey is telling me that there are grants that are made by the Department of Health to some counties that they could use then for this purpose?
I'm sure that's correct.
But I think I'd like to have that more clear, because normally when we're talking about state funds for a match for Medicaid, we're talking about funds appropriated to the Department of Human Services to make a Medicaid match with. So maybe we can think about how we could clarify that language a little bit. Since I had to ask about it, I'm not sure anybody else will know what it is either. Then on page 2, the study that the Department of Health is to conduct, are they able to absorb the cost of this study?
Madam Chair, I believe in conversations with my office and the department yesterday, they said they could. Right. Ms. Bremer is nodding her head.
If she could come up and put that on the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Bremer from the Minnesota Department of Health. The question is about this study. We plan on using our epidemiologist who's funded out of the federal CLIP program, the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program. So there's a staff person who can do this study. And we don't plan on taking any new samples. It's analyzing data that we already have.
Okay.
That's what we were talking about. We weren't sure.
Okay, then Senator Higgins, Ms. Kavanaugh is suggesting on line 1.35 after the word state that we insert the word grants.
Okay.
No.
No.
Madam Chair, I apologize for our confusion. It's because this is language that splits between three different programs, so that's why we're all trying to figure out what the exact answer is.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Hogan. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health, the Environmental Health Division. The local funds that are used are really local funds that are collected at the local level. The state health department does not provide grants out to local agencies to do intervention. For the most part, about 82 of the counties, the state does the environmental intervention on lead hazards with a child elevated with elevated blood lead levels. And the remaining counties do that intervention with their own funding source.
So are you telling me that the Department of Health has money they use now from their state appropriations for cleanup?
Not for cleanup, but for the environmental intervention piece of it, for doing the identifying the lead hazards in these properties.
And that those state funds then would be used to match federal funds under the bill?
Correct.
So then, Madam Chair, it sounds like the original language is the correct language, doesn't it?
Well, except that it is a very bizarre arrangement because normally the only way we get a Medicaid match for any state expenditures is by having that money routed through the Department of Human Services. So.
And so here comes Human Services.
Hello. Madam Chair and members, I'm Vicki Kuhner from the Department of Human Services. It is a little unusual, but what would happen is that this is an expanded service. We would go through a state plan amendment, which we'd likely get easily because, as you've heard, other states have gotten it. And both the Department of Health and or the counties, whoever's doing it, would bill us. And we would make sure that we would reimburse them just the federal share. And it'll work. And that way, and we also have sort of the maintenance of effort language up in that line 1.6 and 1.7, so they would only be used to expand services. But this works.
So you don't feel, Ms. Kuhner, that this language needs to be any clearer so that we understand that this is not the state taking on an obligation to fund the state share of a new Medicaid service?
Correct. We would make sure through the editing process, through our MMIS system, that we would only release the federal share to bills for this service.
And Ms. Kuhner, there would be no charge for changing your MMIS system?
Madam Chair, this is actually a very minor piece, and we are not issuing a fiscal note for this step at all.
What a miracle. Okay. And are there any other questions about the amendment?
Yes, I'd like to ask
Senator
the
Lori.
Agency, do you really need legislation to be able to make this state plan amendment request of the feds? I mean, I'm trying to figure out.
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, it has always been the tradition that we get authorization from the legislature to seek any expansion in benefits or services. Strictly speaking, we could pursue a request from the feds for permission, but it has been the tradition to always seek legislative approval because generally it does require, to Madam Chair's earlier point, a commitment of general fund dollars or healthcare access fund dollars as well. In this case, similar to our IEP services in school districts, we only provide the federal share because of the school districts have their other source. We are doing it following that tradition, and also so that the members of the legislature are fully informed of any expansion in benefits.
Thank you.
I wouldn't be too happy if they started doing their own state plan amendments, Senator Lori, without our knowing about it. Other questions? Senator Sharon?
I heard something that I just want to filter through another time about that the counties would bill you and you would pay only what the federal government provides for payment for this. Does that mean that there's a portion that's not covered, that the counties will have to be picking up in some way that we're not accounting for here?
Madam Chair, Senator, currently the counties who are doing it themselves, and I believe there's five counties that are doing it themselves, are paying 100%. And so our reimbursing them for the extent of the federal match reduces their cost from 100% to 50%, and it specifies that that would be used for expansion for them to be able to provide more risk assessments.
And maybe, you know, when we're done getting our questions answered, we'll just see if there is any opposition.
I don't know if I'd go down
there. Any other questions? Okay, if not, then is there anyone who wants to testify against the amendment?
Well, yeah, assuming they have to use it all.
I guess not. Okay.
Then, Madam Chair, we've got the A-10 amendment.
Well, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion on the A-9 amendment.
Okay, well, the A-10 amendment would be in order now because it's an amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
So Senator Coring would move the A-10 amendment. Senator Higgins.
And then, Madam Chair, this is an amendment that would clean up the grant language in existing statute for organizations like ClearCorps that do work to clean up, lead problems. And those of you who were in the policy committee heard when I was presenting a different bill that there is basically one organization that applies for this, but it takes them 4 or 5 months to get through the whole process. So this is streamlining the process, and this language comes from the department.
Any questions about the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, then those in favor of the A-10 amendment say aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Now we have the A-9 amendment before us as amended. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the A-9 amendment as amended say aye.
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 Opposed? The A-9 amendment is adopted. Any questions or any further discussion on the bill itself?
Madam Chair, I just had another comment on the original A-9. Just for comfort, I was given permission by the local public health association. Ms. Julie Ring clarified with me yesterday that they do have a position supporting that language. So the local public health agencies do support that risk assessment language.
Okay. Any further discussion? Senator Coring, did you want to move the bill for
yes.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I would so move that Senate File 1015 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you all very much.
And I think that completes our agenda. I just wanted to take a minute to thank Bill, our committee clerk, for the great job that he's done. He is leaving us. He got snatched away by the University of Minnesota lobbying team, which is a permanent job with benefits, which we did not know whether we'd be able to offer him a permanent job. So anyway, we wish Bill well, and we want to welcome his replacement, Chris Zielinski.
Yes.
Did I say that right? Great. We look forward to working with you, Chris, and we hope that you'll have a great time. It's a wonderful learning experience working with the people on this committee. So with that, then the meeting is adjourned. And I think this is our last meeting.
Really?
Really?
Well, I haven't had anybody else clamoring to get their bill heard because they could do it without money. So if there are any more, then we would have another meeting. But I think this may be our last meeting this year.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Sad.